States Court of Appeals in and for the Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as this court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is ATC VanCom versus the NLRB. Mr. Foster.
May it please the court. James N. Foster, Jr., appearing on behalf of ATC VanCom. Your Honors, this is a case involving an employer that is not a recidivist, it's not a violator of the law, it in fact respects employees' rights. There is no evidence in the record of any prior violations of the employees' rights by this employer. This employer was faced with an election in the year 2000 involving two competing unions. Those competing unions were creating tensions in the workplace. By the time we got to a hearing before an administrative law judge on the issue of this bulletin board, we were prevented from presenting any of the evidence indicating what that tension was in the workplace. We thought we'd get a fair hearing before an administrative law judge, and we did not. The issue that we were faced with was a potential fine of $100,000. We have 100 employees, and a California statute that was enacted in the state of California prior to that time, effective 3 days before the election, included a fine of $100 per employee for any violation of this neutrality statute. And the neutrality statute specifically held that you could not in any way defer or assist union organizing in any way. Our bulletin board was paid for. It was a split bulletin board. Half of it was our official notice, and the other half of the bulletin board was union notices for the incumbent union at that time, which was the Teamsters Union. The UTU had filed a decertification.
Is that a mandatory fine or a maximum fine?
It is a fine. It simply says fine, up to.
Up to. Well, that's maximum, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's not mandatory.
It's not mandatory, but it also provides for attorney's fees. The attorney general can bring an action. An individual employee can bring an action. A union.
But how could you think the statute would be retroactively applicable?
Your Honor, because if we hadn't taken action prior to the date of the effective statute, the National Labor Relations Board has cases that if you don't take effective action before the date of something, you may well have a continuing chilling effect. And for that reason, Mr. Graska, who is the manager of the operations, wrote his memo on December 26th saying...
Is that some principle of California law?
Your Honor, there is no California law yet developed on this, but if they borrowed from the National Labor Relations Board and they borrowed law in the area, they would have clearly found that we were continuing to have a chilling effect if we didn't take action prior to January 1 of 2000.
I still don't. Did you have any cases or upon which to base that conclusion that it would be retroactive?
All we had was the material that we attempted to introduce at the hearing before the administrative law judge as to what we knew was coming, and the administrative law judge would not let us introduce that on the record. That's why I couldn't present that to you here, Your Honor.
Present what? I don't understand.
Present the realistic fear.
What's
that
the realistic fear? It's just a matter of, is the statute applicable? Is it preempted? Would any reasonable person actually have worried about being fined?
In California, yes, Your Honor.
I don't think so.
Well, Your Honor, I was prevented from even
There's
presenting
nothing. It's just a matter of argument. There's no evidence. You don't present evidence on the applicability, on the retroactivity of the statute, or on preemption.
Well,
it's a matter of legal argumentation.
But even more so, Your Honor, the issue of the tension in the workplace. We rely upon another case, Nugent Services, Your Honor, which in our brief talks about when you do have a combative, potentially violent issue beginning to emerge among competing groups of employees, you can take action which preserves and protects your situation with regard to an employer and vis-a-vis other employees' rights.
Well, what proof did you have that the bulletin board had become a battleground, putting everybody's safety in jeopardy? Because that's what you needed to show.
We had rumors. We had discussions with Ken Graska, had with employees. We had a broken lock in the bulletin board. We had defaced matters. We tried to present those into evidence, and Judge Kennedy said, "I'm not going to hear it. I just won't let you tell me about it." And Judge Kennedy prevented that from ever being offered to evidence at the hearing. He said, "I won't receive it." And Judge Kennedy, at the outset of the hearing, said, "What are you worried about? This thing's preempted anyway." The same thing I'm hearing, but no one would hear us. No one would allow us actually to have it on the record. All we've asked for is a hearing on the record so we could fully present our evidence to somebody. And the Minister of Law Judge wouldn't let us do that. Now, I can't create evidence here because that evidence should have been in the record before,
did
but
you,
I wasn't allowed
you,
to present
did you
it.
Make a, did you make an offer of proof before the administrative
we
law
made several
setting out? And are those offers of proof, those would have been part of our record here.
They are.
In a written offer. And so specifically...
We offered the broken lock, we offered the tension in the atmosphere, we offered the rumors that were presented to Mr. Grafkin.
And the rumors, what were the rumors?
The rumors that were presented were that the employees were gathering, they were holding assembly, which is precisely what is violative in the statute, the California statute. You can't allow employees to assemble on your premises or use your premises for assembly to either encourage or deter union organizing. We tried to present that in an offer, we did present that in an offer of proof, and that was rejected by Judge Kennedy as well.
So once you heard these rumors, was there any action that was taking place by the company? In other words,
yes.
To let them know that you have to do this off-site, you can't do this on the premises?
We issued a memorandum to employees telling employees that the bulletin board would no longer be allowed to be used by anyone regarding any union election.
I understand election. That. I'm talking about, you said you heard these rumors about they were going to gather on the premises. Did someone just talk to the people in the union and say you can't meet here, you have to meet off premises?
We did not provide an alternative to the employees in either union, Your Honor.
Well, I don't mean that you had to provide an alternative, but if they were not allowed to meet on the premises, to just say that, you have to find another place.
Let me explain the context. This is the driver's room, where there's a soda machine, hot coffee, and a window where bus assignments are passed out.
I understand.
And in this driver's room, there's a bulletin board.
Right.
And the drivers assemble in this room. And the
right.
last thing we wanted to have is a fight, an argument, combativeness, violence of any kind. We didn't want any of that in the driver's room happening because they naturally assembled there for purposes of their job.
Right. But I'm saying if you've heard these rumors and you were concerned that they were going to be meeting there and it would be a problem and both groups wanted to meet, couldn't someone in management say, you know, you have to have your meeting outside the driver's room or off premises? Or, I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding that this bulletin board had become a battleground. That's my issue with it.
The broken lock, the defacing, and the rumors that we heard, we did not want it to go beyond that, Your Honor. That's why we took action immediately. And that's why the action was taken. That's why the notice was presented to the employees. That's why we said we wanted to comply with California law. And in that regard, I guess what I don't understand is even for the period of time preceding when the California law goes into effect, I was sitting down just before I did this oral argument, I'm saying to myself, if you're driving down the street and you see it and it says red, you can't proceed, but further down the street it suddenly says green by the time you get there, you get to go ahead, you get to keep going. And that's essentially what we had here. We had the employer knowing that this statute is going to go into effect, seeing down the road that this statute is going to effect, not getting any guidance. There was no guidance whatsoever from the NLRB with regard to this statute being preempted.
I don't understand your hysteria. The statute is not in effect. The statute is probably inapplicable for the reasons stated by the board in its brief. And the statute, if it's applicable, it's preempted.
Your Honor, I don't have the same faith in the system, perhaps, that I should have.
Too bad. I mean, what do you mean you don't have faith in the system? So you can use self-help and you can ignore the National Labor Relations Act because you don't have faith in the legal system?
Well, my faith, the NLRB says call us someday. They don't tell us who to call. It's like calling Social Security Administration.
You've got lawyers. You're a lawyer. Can't you advise the client this statute is inapplicable for the reasons stated by the board in its brief, not in effect, and preempted?
The board doesn't come out and say it's preempted, Your Honor. They have the
You're supposed to advise your client as to what the law is.
I can't state what the NLRB is afraid to say. I can't tell them it's preempted.
Say? What are you talking about? You read the statutes and you read the labor laws and you advise your client this statute, number one, is not in effect, number two, is inapplicable, number three, is preempted.
Your Honor, the NLRB couldn't even...
And that's as much legal clarity as any client, as any firm is entitled. You can have absolute certainty.
It isn't so much absolute certainty, Your Honor. It's a choice between two competing statutes at that
point. No, it isn't. Look, there's a doctrine of preemption. Don't you understand? If the statutes are inconsistent, the California statute goes. You must know that.
But the National Relations Board in this decision, in this case, does not even say it's preempted.
Of course not. They didn't have to reach the issue.
Your Honor, the only reason they didn't have to reach the issue...
You seem to think that a company is entitled to absolute binding advisory opinions from public agencies before it, you know, can do anything.
No, Your Honor, I'm not seeking an advisory opinion. We had a crisis in the workplace.
We didn't have a crisis. This is all made up because the legal risk for your client was absolutely minimal.
Your Honor, it was real to Mr. Graska. It was real at the time.
Didn't he have a lawyer to advise him at the time and tell him there's nothing to worry about, your legal risk is minimal?
Your Honor.
Did he consult a lawyer?
At the time, he was looking at the...
Did he consult a lawyer?
He consulted the California Chamber of Commerce, which told him of the risk.
The Chamber of Commerce? Doesn't he have a lawyer?
They have a legal staff. You pay for it. It's a hotline, and you get legal advice from the California Chamber of Commerce.
He doesn't have a lawyer.
At the time, he did not seek legal advice on the issue.
Well, if he relies on the Chamber of Commerce, yeah, I can see how he might get concerned. How big is this company?
This company has approximately 1,200 employees nationwide.
What are its annual revenues?
Your Honor, offhand, I do not recall. I apologize.
But it has 1,200 employees.
Easily, Your Honor.
And it can't afford a lawyer.
They do not have, they have a general counsel, but he does not do labor and employment, Your Honor.
So here's a firm, gets into trouble with its union, has 1,200 employees, and doesn't consult a lawyer.
Well, they did after the National Labor Relations Board came after them, Your Honor.
But never thought of asking a lawyer what the bearing of this California statute might be.
They did, though, Your Honor, through the California Chamber of Commerce. And again,
That's not how people get legal advice through a chamber. This is a large firm.
In California.
1,200 employees. Large firm. Doesn't bother to consult a lawyer.
Well, Your Honor.
It's completely irresponsible. They have a lawyer now, or
yes,
are they still going to wing it whenever they get into labor relations trouble, call up the Chamber of Commerce?
They do have an Ask a Lawyer hotline through the California Chamber of Commerce.
What do you mean a lawyer hotline? Why don't they have a lawyer? They have 1,200 employees.
They were simply trying to comply with the...
They're worried about a $100,000 fine. They don't bother to consult a lawyer.
Because the California statute is staring them in the face, Your Honor. Breaking into my time, I'm sorry.
Staring them in the face, so why didn't they consult a lawyer?
After the NLRB charged the kids.
Too late.
Ms. Burdick?
Good morning. Ruth Burdick, appearing for the National Labor Relations Board. Your Honors, I'd just like to emphasize that the two uncontested points that this court needs in order to go ahead and enforce the board's order are these. That the findings of fact that the company violated its duty to bargain in December of 2000 are based on undisputed evidence. And second, that the statute under which the company tries to find cover was not effective until January 1st. The company runs around in circles attempting to find cover under the California statute, and it's very clear from Section 16647 that activity performed with regards to its obligations in our collective bargaining agreement are simply exempted. I have a sense from the court this morning that it has a very firm grasp of the law and facts in this case, and I would like to just simply offer myself for any questions the court may have.
Well, how often is it that situations arise where, in these kinds of hearings, where an opportunity to present evidence is denied? I mean, this facts here are kind of interesting.
I have only anecdotal evidence of my own reading of transcripts. I've seen it a number of times. I believe that our ALJ just saw very clearly that the materials that the company was attempting to put into evidence were simply irrelevant to its defense.
Well, there was no question what they did with the board. I mean, they, as you start out your argument, you made it clear that they acknowledge not making the board in the room available. we seldom have a case where there's an acknowledgement right up front that the alleged violation is in play. These are very fact-intensive situations as far as the intent, and you have great discretion in which cases you choose to go after. And your brother, Foster, suggests it's not a company with a history of problems in this area. I don't know whether that's the case or not, but you must have thought this was a highly unique situation to go forward. And they're suggesting potential violence in the workplace, are they not?
Yes,
to the ALJ?
Yes, they are, and none of the evidence that they proffered.
Well, how do we know that? How do we know that? There's a suggestion of violence. They suggest there's property damage. Rumors are what they may or may not be. I don't know what would have been offered. I'm sure the board is concerned about that kind of activity. Not to justify their breaching a commitment to neutrality. But I just on the issue of labor peace, it just seems to me an interesting decision not to hear what they had to say on that.
Well, once again, I just really do believe it was so clearly not the case here, that, and particularly looking at the documents that are before the board, even though they weren't admitted to evidence, it's fully here. The additional testimony that the company was attempting to elicit, as the ALJ pointed out, wouldn't even demonstrate anything to bring this case within the Nugent standard of extraordinary circumstances of such violence. Here they were simply attempting to put in evidence that a few employees spoke in the lunchroom, in the driver's room, for instance. Where's the violence? This was a company that...
So they dealt with the lock incident. That was in the proffer, right?
That's correct.
Then the business rep tells Graska he better hope the election didn't go his way because he was going to make his life miserable.
That's correct.
And then what specifically were the others that they tried to offer?
Well, various. They were trying to make an argument that not only was there violence, but there was tension. Well, frankly, how was their duty of bargain? How would the duty of bargain with the union be excused by simply a lock being broken? This is what they proffered. Simply does not raise the level of evidence that was found in Nugent.
What if management walked into the room and saw the actual defacement of respective literature by both sides, and management said, you have to leave, and closes the board, precludes any more posting for a day. Some internal limitation on communication. Is that the kind of matter that the board feels is violative?
Well, that'll give me an opportunity to illustrate what the company should have done in this case. When it had a concern, it should have immediately approached the union under its bargaining duty, notified the union of its concern, bargained with the union, and worked out a solution. Mm-hmm. This company unilaterally acted on its own as if it had no duty to bargain, as if there was no National Labor Relations Act. And here that simple engagement of the union in working out a solution, because in a midterm situation where you have a bargaining agreement where the parties have agreed to, no unilateral action can be taken by the company without obtaining the union's consent. This is simply a small practical problem that has gotten way out of control. And it's my personal opinion that the company just simply got some bad legal advice, and this case has escalated to a situation where it is now before this court, I believe fundamentally unnecessarily.
The board thinks that management acted on bad legal advice, so that's...
It's my personal opinion, Your Honor.
Yeah.
My personal opinion.
Interesting decision that the client ought to fall for unwise legal.
Here the board contained its decision to noting that the findings of fact were uncontested underlying its violation findings, and then limited it to the legal conclusion that the statute was inapplicable because it did not begin until January 1st and no way could excuse the company's unlawful behavior before that time.
So the board actually thinks they're just a ruse by the company. They're just grabbing on this.
I can't exactly characterize what was in the minds of the board at the time, but it's clear the board finds that the company did not even show that the California statute was indeed applicable to its December 2000 conduct.
How big an operation in Illinois is ATC?
That would be a question I'm afraid you have to ask company counsel. I know that there was about 100 drivers at the facility.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions from the court?
Apparently not.
Okay. Well, I just ask you to please enforce the board's order in this case.
Mr. Burdick? And Mr. Foster, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Burdick.
If I may respond, ATC has operations in Danville, Illinois, as well as their corporate headquarters here in Chicago. Their director of labor relations for the vice president, pardon me.
I'm just trying to get a sense of what was the labor force at the site here, if you know. What was the size of this operation?
At the size of the site, it's 100 employees with about 7 members of management.
Okay.
Handling various dispatching, clerical functions, as well as managing the operations. They don't have a human resource officer there on site.
Now, is your Nugent argument, is that freestanding or is that tied in somehow with the California statute?
No, that's freestanding, Your Honor. That's a freestanding argument. And if I might also, with regard to the California statute, in ATC's brief at page 25, we offered evidence that was placed in the rejected exhibit column, a decision which Mr. Graska had at the time, that he continued to enforce the policy he had drafted called California Chamber of Commerce versus California, in which a California Federal District Court dismissed a lawsuit at that time.
You don't put, decisions are not evidence.
Well, this was sent to him
from... Decisions are something you cite to a court. The court takes judicial notice of decisions. They're not evidentiary matters.
Again, this was sent to Mr. Graska from the California Chamber of Commerce through that period of time leading up to the election, indicating that they were attempting to establish that the statute was preempted, but could not and did not effectively establish it was preempted. The case was dismissed. My light is now on. Again, Your Honor, our whole goal in this case, Your Honors, is to present the evidence at the hearing as it should have been. At the hearing, we began before Judge Kennedy, and the first thing...
Well, that's your Nugent argument. There's no evidence that bears on the California statute.
True, Your Honor. What we simply want is a hearing before...
You have everything mushed together. I don't understand. Your brief, it does not separate the Nugent issue from the California issue.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The evidence is only relevant to Nugent. It's not relevant to the statute.
You're correct, Your Honor, but it was part and parcel of our good faith reason.
You get the part and parcel. Do you have a Nugent argument or you have a statutory argument of some sort? I don't know how they're...
Your Honor, in the minds of my client, they were both. And while they should be separated, perhaps fault me for ineffective brief writing.
Where did your client, who has no lawyer, learn about the Nugent case?
Well, he didn't cite the Nugent case. I cited the Nugent case on his behalf in an effort to try and... I've run out of time, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
You can complete your thought.
Thank you. The Nugent case was cited because it's on all squares. It fits on all fours with why the NLRB was wrong in not remanding this matter for a hearing. That's all we ask before the board is an alternative remedy as well.
How much time was there taken up before Judge Kennedy in this matter?
It took less than a half a day, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.